initiating a saline lock and intravenous infusion. Hypovolemic shock, which is caused by a decrease in the volume of blood in the casualty's circulatory system, sometimes caused by serious bleeding such as a cut artery on an extremity or an amputation. Hypovolemic shock is one of the most common forms of shock that you'll deal with as a combat lifesaver due to the nature of what you'll be dealing with. Blast injuries, gunshot wounds, things that you may see can cause a person to suffer from hypovolemic shock, which can also result from internal bleeding inside the abdominal cavity. It can be caused by a blunt force trauma to the abdomen or a pelvis fracture or something of that nature. Severe burns, dehydration, sometimes caused by vomiting and diarrhea, and also profuse sweating. Hypovolemic shock can result in death unless it is treated, and an intravenous infusion is a good way to do that. Some of the signs of hypovolemic shock that you may see: sweaty but cool, clammy skin. The clammy is wet. The patient will have sweatiness, but their skin will be cool, so we call that cool and clammy. Pale skin, restlessness, nervousness, and agitation. May sometimes be hard to tell this when you're looking at a patient if you do not know what their norms are. Unusual thirst, confused, unusual behavior, rapid breathing, blotchy, bluish skin, especially around the mouth and nose, and this is called cyanosis, and sometimes nausea. Now, we control hypovolemic shock two ways. The first way is we need to stop the bleeding. We need to control the bleeding. That is taught in another lecture. And we do that by several different ways. We are very familiar with a CAT tourniquet or combat application tourniquet, also the emergency bandage, and some of our blood clotting agents as Chitosan, Hemcon, things of that nature. But an intravenous infusion is what we're going to talk about today. Now, when we start with this, an intravenous infusion, which is sometimes referred to as an IV, is done when fluids are introduced by piercing a vein, normally in the arm, with a catheter over needle unit. It's called a venipuncture. The needle is withdrawn from the skin, leaving the catheter in the vein. Some years ago, you may have noticed that whenever they started intravenous infusions, they left the needle in place. But now we have catheter over needle units, and all we leave in the skin is a Teflon catheter, in which we attach to the tubing and also to the fluid. The saline lock, sometimes a casualty is wounded. They may not need an IV at that time, but still may need fluids at a later time. Unfortunately, by the time their fluids are needed, they're already in a shocky situation, and it may be difficult to insert a catheter into that vein. So we want to go ahead and start that now, and then once the fluids are needed, we won't have to go ahead and initiate that IV. The saline lock allows you to place a catheter inside the vein and then seal off that catheter until you or other medical personnel are ready to administer fluids at a later time. Saline lock adapter should be applied even if you're going to give fluids immediately. The reason we want to do this is we may need to DC that IV in a hurry if we're going to medevac that patient out, and this is a good way to do that. The saline lock gives you the ability to stop giving IV fluids and then start again at a later time without performing another venipuncture. The supplies that you'll need: an 18-gauge catheter over needle unit, see a picture of those to the right, a saline lock plug or adapter, you'll also see a picture of that to the right, the constricting band, sometimes referred to as a tourniquet in the IV world, but it's not the same tourniquet that you'll be used to when you're controlling bleeding. So a constricting band is a good word to use to not get that confused. Tegaderm dressing, which is a thin piece of plastic that is adhesive on one side. We use that to cover up the IV site and keep it sterile. And then an alcohol or iodine pad. Always need our gloves. BSI precautions are the most important thing that we'll use. We'll need a 21-gauge, 1.25-inch needle without a catheter. A 5-milliliter syringe, and then a bag of IV fluids. That can either be normal saline, lactated ringers, Hextan, HETA starch, any of the things that you may see in the field. Now, Hextan is a physiologically balanced blood plasma volume expander. It is a little better for hypovolemic shock than would be normal saline or lactated ringers, because it actually increases the plasma volume and does aid in some carrying of oxygen. It is completely sterile. It replaces sodium chloride and ringer's lactate when you're dealing with hypovolemic shock. We want to select our site for venipuncture. The preferred sites are in the peripheral veins of the antecubital fossa. That is anterior to just below the elbow. If you'll notice the picture to the right, the patient's hand is open, arm facing forward, right in the bend of the elbow. You'll notice two veins that are right beside of each other. That is the antecubital fossa. That is our primary site. That's where we're going to initially look. If we can't find anything there, then we may look in the back of the hand. We'll try to use the non-dominant hand if possible, but that's not always the case. We need to expose that site. We try not to cut clothes. We'll try to take arms out of sleeves if we can, because you do not want to get rid of that patient's clothes. They may need them for a later time. Palpate and feel for a vein. Select the vein that can be easily felt and seen. Sometimes you'll be able to see those, sometimes you won't. Your lighting may not allow you to see that. So you also want to be able to feel that vein. We want one that is large enough to accommodate the catheter and straight enough that we'll be able to thread that catheter in. It needs to be free of scars and moles and excessive hair if possible. And one thing we do want to try to do is avoid sticking through tattoos if at all possible. Avoid joints. If the patient has a palpable pulse there, you do not want to stick that. That's not a vein. It will be an artery. And we don't want to try to stick there. And also veins that are near or below an injury. If the patient has an upper arm injury between the elbow and the shoulder, we do not want to stick in this antecubital fossa area. Before we perform the venipuncture site and initiate the saline lock, we want to wrap the constricting band around the limb about 2 inches above the selected site. You should pull one half a longer end and a shorter end, and then you want to draw the longer end under the shorter end so that the band can be released with one hand. If you look at the picture to the right, the only thing they'll have to do is pull that longer tail that's at the top, and that constricting band will pop loose. Be sure your tails always point away from your venipuncture site to get them out of your way. And this constricting band should never remain in place longer than 2 minutes. During your testing process and your skills evaluations, longer than 2 minutes will be an automatic failure. Once you've got the constricting band in place, you will tell the casualty to clench and relax his fist several times, and then keep it clenched. When the patient keeps their fist clenched, those muscles are contracted, and it's asking for blood to be drawn into that extremity. Palpate the vein to ensure that the vein is still suitable. You see the picture at the top. He's taking his finger and he's palpating that vein. And then you want to cleanse the selected site. Once you've touched it, and then we cleanse it, you cannot go back and touch it again, or you'll have to re-clean it. So be sure you know where it is prior to cleaning that site. Cleanse it with alcohol or iodine, and you want to do this in a circular motion, beginning at the center and spiraling outward. And this all will be demonstrated for you. Be sure your gloves are on. You want to remove the catheter needle from the unit, catheter needle unit from the package. I don't like to talk in dominant and non-dominant hands, but you want to hold the hand, you want to hold that unit in the hand that you feel comfortable sticking with. The hand that you feel comfortable, secure, and stable, so that when you go to stick that IV, that you will be very precise with that movement. Remove the protective cap without contaminating the needle. You want to hold the flash chamber of the unit with your thumb and forefinger, and position the unit so that the bevel of the needle is up. If you look at this needle, and the next pictures that we'll see will show the needle a little better, there is a point on one side and a bevel on the other, which is an angled area that comes back. You want that pointing straight up, and you want that directly above or slightly to one side of the selected vein. I prefer directly above. Some people would like to stick on the side of that vein and actually stick into the side of it. Pull the skin over the venipuncture site taut. This can be done several ways. One way is by pressing approximately 1 inch below the site with your thumb and pulling down on that skin, and that will also make it tight. Another way to do it is to grab the arm or the extremity with your hand and pull the skin down towards the elbow. Here's a picture that shows the bevel pretty well. Position the needle in the point of the needle, bevel side up. about a half inch below your vena puncture site and approximately 20 to 30 degree angle. 20 to 30 degrees may sound like an awful steep angle, but you have to get over your thumb if you're holding your vena puncture site like the person in the picture to the right. Insert the bevel needle into the skin. Once it pierces beneath the skin, you want to lower the angle of the catheter needle unit, until it's almost parallel to the skin surface. You notice this picture here, they dropped it down almost parallel, and then you want to advance the catheter needle until the wall of the vein is pierced. Once the wall of the vein is pierced, you'll see in the picture there they have some blood in the flash chamber. They know now that they have pierced that vein because blood is coming back into that flash chamber, and that is classified as a successful puncture. Now, that doesn't mean we're done. Once we've got a successful puncture, then we need to advance the catheter needle unit approximately an eighth of an inch. Once you've got blood in the flash chamber, about an eighth of an inch, to ensure that the catheter is in the vein and not just the needle tip. Once we've got that done, we want to stabilize the flash chamber. You'll notice this person here has got one hand on the flash chamber and one hand on the catheter. Hold the needle still. Do not move the needle. You want to advance the catheter only into the skin. Do not push the needle any further. Hold the needle still and advance the catheter only into the skin, all the way up to the catheter hub. Once the catheter hub is against the skin, then you want to hold that catheter hub and press lightly on the skin just above the catheter tip. Now you have to be ahead of the catheter in order to clamp off the blood flow or it's going to continue to bleed. So go above the catheter. You'll notice if your catheter is an inch and a half long, then you need to go a little longer than that. Press lightly above there and hold pressure on that vein. And then you want to remove the flash chamber and needle from your catheter and lay the flash chamber needle aside. I prefer that you either put it into a sharps container or stick it into the ground or something where it is not exposed to someone else to get stuck with. You can tell the casualty at this point to unclench the fist. Immediately release your constricting band. Hopefully this has not been longer than 2 minutes. I don't think we'll have any problems with that. And uncap the male end of the saline lock adapter plug. Once you have uncapped the adapter plug, then you want to insert it into the hub of the catheter and twist it a half a turn to the right. Now you can release pressure from over the vein because that person cannot bleed now because that saline lock plug has got that covered. Remove your Tagoderm dressing. This should have been already removed from the package. If not, then we want to go ahead and remove that from the package. You can let go of this IV as long as the casualty is still, or you can have the casualty hold it for you. And then you want to apply that Tagoderm dressing over the entire site. You want to cover up the adapter and also the hub. You'll notice this picture covers everything with the Tagoderm dressing. This is a video that you'll see a little later in the slideshow. We'll have some videos attached to this so that you can watch an actual IV from start to finish. Now, we want to flush the saline lock. If we were going to initiate fluids at this time, then we would not immediately, if we were going to initiate fluids immediately, then we would not need to flush it. But we're going to go ahead and flush the saline lock because we don't want to start fluids at this time. So to do this, we will need to get fluid from our IV bag. And the reason we're going to do this is we're going to check the site for infiltration. This means that the fluid is into the tissue instead of the vein. Now we want to attach our 21 gauge needle that we had. This is a needle without a catheter to our 5 milliliter syringe. And then we want to remove the cover from our IV bag port. And you'll notice the arrow to the right is showing where this cover is. You want to pull that off. And then you want to fill your syringe with sterile fluid from that bag. Okay, once you've got this done, you can replace that cover back over it. Once you've got your fluid filled syringe, you want to penetrate the Tagoderm dressing with the needle. And you want to stick straight through that Tagoderm dressing right into that catheter hub. Okay, you want to, there's an injection port right there on the end of that saline lock plug. Take that needle. If the patient is, if it's been a couple minutes since you've done that and the patient may have some dirt or something on top of that saline, that Tagoderm dressing, then we would like to go ahead and clean that, okay? And we can clean that with just an alcohol prep or an iodine prep or something. Go ahead and get that cleaned. Inject the sterile fluid into the catheter. And at this time, we want to look for signs of infiltration. This can be pain. The patient may say it's burning, swelling. You'll notice that it maybe get rigid around the area, redness, or fluid leaking from the site. If you notice underneath the tegaderm dressing that some fluid is trying to back up around where your hub is up against the skin, then you're probably not going to be in a vein. Once we've got all that fluid in there, then we want to withdraw a needle from the saline lock and properly dispose of that needle as well, along with our IV needle that we used. Administering intravenous fluids through the saline lock. We want to check our IV bag for expiration date, clearness of fluid, tears, fluid leakage, and contamination. One way I like to remember this is date, color, and clarity. Date, color, and clarity of your fluid. You're looking for the expiration date. You're looking for the color and the clarity. You want to make sure that fluid is clear. Okay. When you look through it, hold the bag up and look through it, you want to make sure there's nothing floating in it. And you want to make sure that it looks like water. It needs to be clear. Obtain the following. You need an IV bag. It can be Hextan or it can be normal saline. Lactated ringers, head of starch, whatever you want to use. An IV infusion set, which is your drip set. An 18-gauge needle catheter hub. An 18-gauge needle catheter unit and some tape. The same 18-gauge, same type of 18-gauge that you use to initiate that IV. Remove the infusion set from the package. You'll notice the picture to the right. There's your infusion set. And you want to loosen the clamp and move the clamp along the tubing until it's about 6 to 8 inches from the drip chamber. The two pictures here at the bottom show an open and closed. And you want to slide that clamp up the tubing until it's about 6 or 8 inches from the drip chamber. And then you want to tighten it back down. Remove your protective covering from the outlet port. And this is the long spout in your IV bag. If you look over there to the right, you'll see the long spout and the short spout. This is your long spout. And then you want to remove the protective cap from the spike. If you'll notice in this gentleman's right hand, he has the spike on the end of his IV tubing. Once you take that protective cap off, you do not want to touch that spike because that spike needs to go in and needs to stay sterile. Insert that spike into the exposed IV outlet port, and you need to do this in a twisting motion. In order to do this, you need to keep that port straight because that spike will pierce the side of the bag and then you'll have a leak. We will probably have someone do that. Once you've got it in, squeeze the drip chamber until half of the chamber is filled with the IV solution. If you get it too full, you can always flip the bag upside down and squeeze the fluid back into the bag. But you only want it to be half full. The picture to the right shows that. Now, we want to remove the air from our tubing. We do not want to get any air into this casualty. Air can cause an air embolism, which is not a good thing if it gets to the lungs or to the brain. But we're going to remove that air so we don't have to worry about it. Now you do this by holding the end of the tubing above the bottom of the bag. Loosening the tubing clamp allows fluid into the tubing, and then you want to loosen the protective cap on the end. Right out past this gentleman's hand is a blue protective cap. We want to loosen that, and that will allow air to escape. Once fluid starts running, we can gradually lower that tubing until the fluid reaches the end of the adapter. And I would like to see some fluid run out, okay, because all the air bubbles aren't going to come out initially. And then reclamp the tubing and retighten that adapter cap. Now, you will look into the IV tubing and you'll see some bubbles. These bubbles aren't going to hurt anything. It takes approximately 10 cc's of air to cause an air embolism, which is about a tubing full of air. So there's going to be a few bubbles. We're not worried about those few. They're not going to hurt anything. Remove your 18-gauge catheter needle unit from the package, same way we did when we started our IV. Again, if we need to clean the IV site, we can. If not, then we want to hold that needle catheter unit, stabilize the saline lock between your thumb and forefinger, and then you want to insert it completely through the tegaderm and into the saline lock adapter until your hub is buried all the way up to the end of the saline plug. Now, if you were to pull that needle out, the patient will bleed, obviously, because you have a direct line into that vein. So now we need to take our hand over the vein just beyond the catheter tip and apply our pressure again. Retract and discard the needle. Make sure that the catheter stays in place. And then we'll take our IV tubing, remove the adapter from the, remove the cover, the adapter cover from the tubing, And then we'll just insert that into the hub, just like we did the saline lock into the initial hub when we started our IV, with a half a twist to the right. Once that tubing's into the hub of the catheter, we'll loosen the clamp about halfway. We don't want to run it wide open right now. We'll just open it about halfway, start allowing some IV solution to flow into the drip chamber. And then we will look for infiltration and go ahead and unroll us about 2 inches of tape. Now, tape can be done, this can be done several different ways. I'll share with you the way that the PowerPoint explains it, and you'll see several other different ways when we do our skill stations. Place some tape sticky side up, lay it on the casualty's arm underneath the IV tubing, okay? A few inches behind the catheter hub and beyond the tachyderm dressing. Now fold that tape strip back over itself, okay, trapping the tubing between the sticky sides of the tape. This holds that tubing and does not allow it to move. And then you want to wrap the additional tape around the limb and the IV tubing distal to the first one. Okay, ensure that the tubing is secure and the IV flow is not impeded. Now we can again check our infusion site for signs of infiltration. Discontinue the intravenous infusion. We do this for several reasons. We want to evacuate that patient. It's time to medevac them out, and we need to get rid of that IV because the medics do not want that tubing and everything with them. IV fluid's been used up. We gave them a whole bag of fluid, and we don't want to give them any more, and we just want to DC it. We don't want to DC the IV. We just want to get rid of that fluid. Infiltration. Something's happened. They moved their arm. The IV has blown. You start noticing some redness, some swelling. The patient starts complaining. And then there's obvious other reasons that we would want to do that. The way we do this is we adjust the clamp on the tubing so that flow is stopped. Tighten down on the tubing. Loosen and remove the tape. We want to get rid of all that. And then we want to remove the IV catheter hub that is outside the tachyderm dressing. Simply done by grabbing a hold of the tubing and pulling it out. You'll see that in the video. The saline lock adapter stays in place because we want to use that again for later use. Now, for some reason we want to DC the IV. Infiltration, for instance. The IV has blown. The patient starts complaining of some severe pain around the site. You notice some redness. We want to take the tachyderm dressing loose. Peel the tachyderm dressing up. Holding on to the catheter as you peel it up. Once you get the tachyderm dressing loose, you can grasp the catheter hub and remove the catheter from the vein. We do this at an angle almost parallel to the skin. Be sure that you have that puncture site covered with a gauze dressing, and you want to hold pressure there until the bleeding stops, or have your casualty hold pressure there until the bleeding stops. If you do not have time to hold pressure there until the complete bleeding has stopped, tape that dressing down, leave it in place, and the bleeding will stop. I hope I've covered this for everybody in a timely fashion, and good luck on your testing.